Hi everyone, welcome back to the Student Voice podcast. My name is Natasha. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm from Tucson, Arizona.
Hey there, my name is Gabriel, and I have he, him pronouns, and I'm from Orlando, Florida. Now we're going to start off with a quick icebreaker, which is what does 4th of July or freedom mean to you? Nat, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. I feel like the 4th of July is really just a big irony festival. Like that's kind of how it feels to me. It's like we love independence, we love freedom, so we're gonna ignore every single way that our country does not protect freedom and then just set off a bunch of fireworks that sound like gunshots so that we further traumatize the people that have been hurt by this country. What about you?
Oh, well, that's a fun story. The 4th of July is pretty meaningless because even though the country gained independence in August, this was because the most of the signings were in July. So even though that was just the freedom of white men who had property in the so-called America. When, as a person of color, specifically a Puerto Rican and Mexican young person, it feels like nothing to me because not only that, but I am trans. So I fight at every single corner and I get, even though I'm in spaces where I would feel like I would be included, it still is a fight to feel represented and to feel fair in my life. So it just feels like there is not really a source of freedom.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Yeah. Definitely understandable that you would feel that way. Yeah, so I think that every year when this rolls around, there's kind of this conversation of do we celebrate it? Do we not celebrate it? Personally, neither of us do for fairly obvious reasons. And I think also something to mention is how we celebrate it. So something we wanted to talk about really quick is fireworks. If you don't know, fireworks are really hard on people with PTSD because obviously they can sound like gunshots. So for people who have been through gun violence or even veterans per se, yeah, that it's really difficult every year to have to hear that. So please keep that in mind. And also the fact that every year there are many, many fires caused by fireworks, especially in California. I believe it was the Eagle Creek fire where 50,000 acres of land burned because one person set off illegal fireworks. So please keep that in mind. Just to go into the history of 4th of July a little bit. So this has kind of always been continuously celebrated with parades, picnics, barbecues, originally cannon fire, public games, and play acting. And there were military companies of infantry assembly, and then of course moving towards fireworks. This was kind of casually celebrated until June 28th, 1870, when it was made an official federal holiday. So since then, obviously, there's been people kind of speaking out about how this holiday is viewed by varying communities. Specifically, Frederick Douglass talked about this in his speech. So I don't know, would you want to?
Yeah, I can go into it. So going into Frederick Douglass's speech, which was in 1852, the speech was, "What to the slave is the 4th of July?" Which as an abolitionist means that how are we supposed to celebrate freedom when we don't even have freedom ourselves? Because it would be another 89 years until Black Americans had freedom in their own country that they were forcefully taken in. And in his words are just so heartbreaking yet beautiful. If you look at it, we'll put a link in the show notes for it. It talks about gross injustice and cruelty and Black American experience in his speech. What to the American slave is your 4th of July? How will you celebrate your freedom if we yet do not have it?
Yeah, and I think he really summarized a powerful point throughout that, and just once again how, yeah, whose freedom are we celebrating? When people were still enslaved for that long after, and the fact that even after slavery was ended, that Black Americans were still not free through segregation and the prison system. and through the ways that so many people in the U.S. are still discriminated against, not to mention the Indigenous people whose land we are currently on.
Talking about Indigenous lives, I feel like it is necessary to address what is currently going on in Canada. Nat, would you want to continue?
Yeah, so just to take a moment to talk about that for a second, if you don't know, there were 771 Indigenous children who were found murdered at the residential schools in Canada. And these schools were developed by the Catholic Church and by the state to essentially take Indigenous children and take them away from their culture. And it resulted in a lot of trauma for Indigenous communities and for the deaths of many, many children. And in addition to losing them, there, of course, was no justice, but also no information about what happened to them. So we can only imagine the loss and the fear of going through that. And so I think it's important to just take a moment to talk about that. And while we're talking about our 4th of July in the United States and that holiday, to acknowledge the fact that Canada Day is also coming up and that that is a particularly difficult day for a lot of people.
Definitely. And I have been looking at how some people are celebrating Canada Day in a way that is not celebration, but in wearing orange and being in remembrance of all the lives that we have lost, especially Indigenous lives, through residential schools and through just Indigenous genocide that has been going on for years and years.
Yeah, and I think that's a really great example of what we can make 4th of July, and how we can take it as a day to learn and understand the history of what that day really is. And I think that the way that a lot of Canadian activists are addressing this and talking about it is really something to look towards. And I think that we should, you know, on this day, if we can, a lot of us are forced to celebrate this holiday with family. But if we can take July 4th as a day to learn, understand, just take kind of personal and community accountability for everything, for colonization and slavery and discrimination that still happens, and to not have it be a day of celebration, but just kind of a day of almost mourning, I suppose, is kind of how I see it.
I totally get that, but I feel like not only should it be a day of mourning, it should be a day of taking action and realizing of all the power that is held, that is withheld between us and everyone else who lives in this country and in other countries around us. I feel like it should be a day of action to where we fight and we continue to make this a pivot point as to what we can accomplish in this world.
Yeah, no, that's a great point for sure. I think that, you know, as you can tell, this episode is not very light and airy and whatnot. But, you know, I think definitely we can look at the situation at hand and try to think of how we can make it better in whatever big or small way. And so, yeah, we need to acknowledge everything that's happened, understand what's still happening. And you're right, just try to take action however we can.
So after that lovely conversation, I think we should talk about how this is the land of the free. We repeatedly say it within our daily announcements and the absolute forced nationalism. Our forced nationalism is drilled in our heads that this is the land of the free. But as we grow and as we learn more about our country and how different we are from each other and how those differences can become villainous and become factor to our own deaths, is it really a land of the free? As we celebrate 4th of July in 1776, we are known that slaves were not free until almost a century later. 89 years, half of the population had to wait for their own small sense of freedom. And then even after that, we are still not free. This country was made for certain people to succeed and others for others to stay behind. And it has become more clear as we grow every day. because even though slavery is abolished, it is still absolutely legal within the 13th Amendment with our prison system. And minorities face a lot more hurdles than others because the system doesn't work for us. It is specifically working against us so that others may succeed. So what are we truly celebrating? Are we celebrating freedom in its own lightest sense of being freed from a different country? Or are we celebrating genocide? And are we celebrating a division between thousands of peoples just so that a few small group, a true 1%, can succeed in a different world?
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And I think that's a beautiful way of wording it. And also, I think it kind of brings up how, you know, for that small group of people who the system does benefit, I think that they really do view, a lot of people really do view freedom as the freedom to oppress other people. And I think that comes up a lot in the conversation of queer people specifically. And this thing of people saying, it's my right to not use people's pronouns. It's my right to not, quote unquote, agree with your identity, as if you can disagree with that. And I think that for a lot of people, that is what they think freedom is, you know? And I think that something we're going to need to work on is really understanding that freedom shouldn't mean the ability to go into Walmart and buy a gun. It shouldn't mean the ability to decline your kids learning about race in schools. Freedom should be all of us being able to feel safe. I think that there's no freedom without feeling safe, and there's no freedom without community and collaboration. We can't just have constant individualism.
I totally agree with that statement. That was really well put. Now, going into that, I know that there is so much sense of so many others not being able to feel free, but there is still more. There is still the American Samoa and Puerto Rico. Now, within the most recent news, we know that Congress has been trying to give Puerto Rico some sort of rights because we have been fighting for it for the longest time. We have been an island where we have just been essentially held captive by others. There has been Taino genocide. There has been conquistadores. And there has been so much violence within my island that it still feels captive. Even when you go now, it is so Americanized because they are just trying to live with what they have. And it is essentially nothing. If you look at what the most recent news within our Congress, it's been trying to give us a way to not necessarily become a free country, but to give us possibly a choice, which seems ridiculous. Because within the government that is held within Puerto Rico, we don't have a president, we have a governor, and it is almost no representation to what we have. And it is just, it's heart-wrenching. And I sadly know not much about the Samoa, but I feel it is possibly the same as what has been faced with Puerto Rico. Because it's a colony. It is 2021, and there are still colonies within this world. And it is just heartbreaking to see that there is not more independence, that there is not more freedom available because we're not allowed it. Now, before I go on an entire rant, Nat wanted to talk about the international affairs and how we affect that. Nat, go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, once again, just to bring up the U.S. hypocrisy of everything, you know, we sit here and we talk about freedom, and even, you know, sometimes in more liberal spaces we talk about human rights. And I think that you know, one thing with having a Democrat as president, and you know, we kind of assume that that means the government is going to care about human rights and that it's going to care about freedom. And you know, sometimes that is more so the case when it comes to local policy and policy within the U.S. And that doesn't often span to foreign affairs. So if we look at the Obama administration, with how so many wars in the Middle East were just fueled by of how that administration handled things. And now we luckily more people are talking about what's happening in Palestine, because with that, it's again one of those things where it has been happening. It's just that now, and people have been speaking out about it. It's just that now there's kind of more people acknowledging it. But yeah, the United States has given $735 million to Israel for weapons. And that money is going towards oppressing people in Palestine and colonizing Palestine. And when you really read through and look at what they're doing, taking children away from their parents, basic human rights violations, war crimes, people lacking food and safety, the attacks in Gaza, that is being fueled by our government. And there is a huge disparity between foreign aid to Israel and foreign aid towards Palestine. Once again, this is not an even conflict. And some people may say it's complicated, and I would say that everything is complicated, but this does come down to colonization. And so I think that there's always kind of this conversation when it comes to foreign affairs about when should the U.S. intervene, you know, when is it our responsibility to do something? And I think before we can even have that conversation, I think we need to have the conversation of how do we stop the U.S. from intervening to make things worse? Because we're not even there yet. You know, like we're not even at that point of how can we help? Because right now we're doing the opposite. Yeah. Gabriel, do you have any thoughts on that?
It's definitely a lot. And I definitely agree with before we try intervening in anything to make it somewhat better, we need to work on how to make it not worse, because it seems that every time we touch something, it turns black. It decays. It just becomes worse and worse the more we put our hands in something. And before we do anything, we need to work on making sure that we are in the right mindset to help before we actually start making some actions.
Yeah, agreed. I think that the U.S. kind of has a bit of a hero complex. I mean, the U.S. has a lot of complexes, but I think that, you know, as we see on 4th of July and as we see in our A push classes and, you know, in just in everything, the U.S. is very glamorized in its history and in how it acts currently. And we see that a lot with war and foreign affairs, especially. We do not often look at things fairly and non-biasedly when it comes to the U.S. military. Just recently, multiple Democrats pretty much defended the U.S. when it came to war crimes and kind of turned the other way and excused it. And also I keep talking about Democrats in this. I am a leftist. I'm not yeah. We don't like the Democrats, but we definitely don't like the other side. And so we don't really look at things fairly. And so I think we see this a lot, even with, you know, World War II, for example. You know, we look at, oh my gosh, the U.S. intervened during the Holocaust, when really the U.S. intervened once a ship was blown up, because that's what the U.S. does, is it kind of sits here until someone blows up a ship or until, you know, the U.S. can benefit from whatever happens. And a lot of the time, if the U.S. can benefit from something, human rights do not really matter. On that note, there is one bill that is arising right now, H.R. 2590, which is to defend the human rights of Palestinian children and families living under Israeli military occupation. And like I said, there's a lot of general human rights violations, obviously, but specifically, what happens a lot is even children and teenagers are subject to a lot of this and a lot of military violence and brutality. So that is something in particular that is very important to support at the very least. Just in general, kind of going back for a second to how do we look at independence and how can we protect our kind of, fragile and messed up view of independence that we have, and how can we shift that into really defending it and really protecting that? So we kind of talked a little bit about that in the context of foreign affairs, but just in general, what do you think about that? Like, if you could just define what you think we need for more, I don't know, just independence as a general concept, because we keep saying it without kind of defining it.
And this is a question for you, our listeners and our viewers. Don't hesitate to give us an answer. We are willing to make sure that you are heard. We want to know what you think and we want to know how you feel. We do have a list of action items, some of them being healing the school to prison pipeline, which I can define what it is right now, going to HuffPost, the school to prison pipeline is institutional racism. It is a no-nonsense trend in American education where children are directed straight from the classroom and into the clutches of the criminal justice system. This manifests itself in a disciplinary practice and zero-tolerance policies that criminalize unruly behavior and minor infractions such as truancy, graffiti, or violating a school dress code. Not only that, it involves the presence of security guards and police on campus. Breaking up a trivial playground fight with a billy club and a taser. Tell me how that is fair to our students within K through 12. How is it fair that we have more SROs than we have guidance counselors or people that we can truly talk to and feel safe? Because I know I don't feel safe in my school when I see another SRO come near me that I don't know. I only have a relationship with one of the SROs, and that's because he will talk to me like a human being. The rest treat you like garbage. They don't want you near you. They don't want them near you. They want to stay away as far as possible, and they're just there to do their job, make us look like criminals. And it is just heart-wrenching. And the way to help would be helping fund education reform. This is not how our education system has to be. I don't want to sound like some cartoon character and say we can fix it, but this is something that can be fixed if we put our heart and mind into it. We can have an education system that doesn't end up this way. We can have one that truly benefits the children that are in this system to make it so that we can create better leaders and make sure that we know how to think and actually act properly. Another action item would definitely be for the People Act or the HR1. Now, the HR1 has been under a lot of stress lately, even though it has been failed in the Senate, there is still a fight to go on. Now, with that, there is an organization called UNPAC, which I'm actually a part of, and our mission is to pass the HR1, the S1, or the For the People Act, as some may know it, during this specific 117th Congress by activating young people to demand democracy reform. The way this is happening is that we're unrigging our broken political system so that politicians work for the fu for our futures and not just for the futures of wealthy donors. The HR1, the S1, the For the People Act is about 800 pages long and has a bountiful list of great things it will do for us. But to break it down, here's what it is. It will protect and expand voting rights. It actually goes in with the John Lewis Act a little bit if you look more deeply. It will create an ethical and accountable government for us to make sure that they no longer work for lobbyists, that they work for the students, that they work for the people that they're supposed to represent. But not only that, it will reduce the influence of big money in politics. That way, half the year that our representatives spend in their term is spent lobbying. That means not spending paying attention to us and our problems, but paying attention to what the people that have money in their pockets have. Now, the way that we can take action with definitely is UNPAC. You can join us at unpac.org. If you look at our website, there is a pledge that you will be able to sign that will help us pass the For the People Act, stating that you support this act and will support Unpack in our journey to making sure that this is passed. Not only that, but you can also volunteer with this pledge. That way you can be able to join me and many others across this entire country in our gigantic fight. There are chapters in multiple states such as Arizona, Florida, and Virginia. That is just a few that I can name off the top of my head. Another action that we have is definitely another bill, which is called the HR 1280 or more known as the George Floyd and Policing Act of 2021. Now, if you don't know about this bill, I'll just give you a quick rundown of what it does. It lowers the criminal intent standard from willful to knowing or reckless to convict a law enforcement officer for misconduct in a federal prosecution. It also limits qualified immunity as a defense to liability in private civil action against law enforcement officers and grants administration's subpoena power to the Department of Justice in pattern or practice investigations. It also limits the unnecessary use of force and restricts the use of no-knock warrants, chokeholds, or corduroy holds. This bill creates a national registry, which is called the National Police Misconduct Registry, to compile data on complaints and records of police misconduct. It also establishes new reporting requirements, including the use of force, officer misconduct, and routine policing practices. An example would be stops and searches. Not only that, but it will direct the Department of Justice to create uniform standards for law enforcement agencies and require law enforcement officers to complete more training on racial profiling, implicit bias, and the duty to intervene when other officers are using excessive force, essentially meaning what happened to George Floyd can possibly never happen again if this goes the right way, to make sure that what happened to Breonna Taylor never happens again if this goes the right way. This is a very huge first step in what we need in our democracy and the laws that we need to make sure that our country works for the people and not for the people in power. So everything that I have said, every resource, every little thing will definitely be in the show notes and will be available to you as you listen on and as you research us.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you so much for listening, and make sure to take a look at those action items. Like we said, you know, approach July 4th with understanding and with, you know, the motivation to take action. So yeah,
thank you and have a great day.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.